Is that a droid in your pocket, or are you my nurse? On this week's Insights in Nursing. Well, good day and welcome to another episode of Insights in Nursing. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, of course, also from The Nursing Show and over a bunch of other things over at promednetwork.com. But I'm most excited every week to get together with my nursing pals and sit down and talk about what's been going on in nursing over the last week or so. And this week is no different. I'm really excited. We have two panelists to kick things off. We might have a few folks come in and join us late. But I do want to start off with a brand new panelist here on the show. Some of you may know her because she's been involved with our conference activities as we go to different shows, and she's been gets the role of the most excellent executive producer of our floor shows because she's so amazingly organized. Anne, welcome to Insights in Nursing.
Thanks for having me. This is exciting to be a part of this expert panel of nurses. Thank you.
And Anne, just real quick, just give us a quick overview of your background in nursing.
My background in nursing, I'm a bachelor's prepared nurse with 14 years of experience. I had 8 years experience in OB, neonatal, in urban and rural settings. And then I went on to doing patient safety and quality. And the last 4 years, I've been involved in public health as a nurse manager there and really working on population-based health services. And just bringing different healthcare organizations together to really meet the demand and need of access to care in our community. So, and I've been involved with some of the social media and the ProMed network now for about 6 months. So it's been exciting just opening my eyes to all these new experiences and ways to communicate with everybody.
Well, I'm excited to add you here to the show and to bring you in to share with the listeners your viewpoints and bring them in. So, you know, this is really loose, and jump right in if you have a comment or a question. And we just kind of have a lot of fun here on the show. So it's a good discussion just for nurses. So welcome.
Thank you.
And Terry Schmidt is back with us, our resident nurse practitioner, and from the wet but not storm embattled part of Missouri. So I guess that's a good thing, Terry, right?
Yes. We're very thankful. We didn't have any rain in the basement.
That's good. Well, 12 inches in just a short time is a lot of rain.
Yes, it is. And Northern Arkansas just, bless their hearts, just got a lot of rain, and other parts of Missouri, the Black River, they, you know, evacuated. So we're very thankful that we weren't part of that.
Well, we're glad you're here and high and dry, at least for the duration of this show. And for those of you that are listening, we've recorded this the day of the big wedding, but we can't talk about it too much because Anne has recorded it and is having a big wedding get-together with pals later this evening. So we're not going to spoil anything and let you know how it turns out.
Sorry, my 10-year-old daughter, she cannot wait. So
be thankful for 10-year-old daughters, because we tried to wake up our daughters who are 12 and 16, and they just rolled over and groaned at us.
Well, that's why you record it, and then you have your girlfriends and their daughters over, and you have a big party. A good reason to drink with cake. Of course, I should go buy some cake and wine, of course.
And juice.
Juice, of course.
I'm going to Anne's house for the cake.
Come on over.
Yeah, well, and I know, Terry, you're big on the wedding cake, but not so much on the wedding stuff. But, you know, certainly it is, I have to say, you know, the Brits, they certainly know how to throw a party.
I'm going to trust you on that, Jamie.
only because I've just, you know, we don't get to celebrate things like that here in much in the country. I mean, the only time we ever do anything like that is like inauguration every 4 years. So it was kind of neat to see the whole country seemed like they were there. So it was pretty amazing. Anyway, let's move off of our wedding topics and into our nursing topics. There's a couple of good articles that popped up on the radar recently, and one of them was really startling to me. And I'm really interested to hear what your thoughts are. We've talked about hospital errors, medication errors, errors in treatment before here on the show. But a recent study that came out the beginning of the month revealed that these researchers revealed that one in three people in the United States will encounter some kind of mistake during a hospital stay. And I mean, one third of us, that means in my household, you know, two people in my family are likely to experience some kind of hospital error. Now, I guess that's the full gamut of errors, but it's still scary to think about that. Anne, any thoughts? You were involved in quality and have that background. I mean, this is something that you were looking at a long time ago.
Right. And we've been looking at, you know, how can we measure our quality initiatives and what impact are our quality programs having on the care that we provide with our patients? And, you know, it comes out as a really startling number, but are we, one thing that my initial thought to that was, are we just doing a better job of collecting the data and really identifying those points of where errors can occur? And are we doing a better job of, you know, just in time correction? And, you know, is it more that the data is better collected, or are we actually having more errors now than we were before? And it's just a question that was my first kick when I read that article. And didn't know what you thought about that.
Well, I mean, saying that rates are 10 times higher than we previously thought seems to say that the previous research is completely invalidated at this point. So who's right? Is it somewhere in between, or is it really just that we're better at collecting the data, we're better at reporting when mistakes occur? Terry, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think Anne has a point. And of course, being the nurse researcher that I am, I want to read the original data. And I think it's how we define that. So if you read through the article, they're saying staph infections. They're calling those medical errors. Well, I know that in my primary care practice, you know, MRSA is the most common infection I'm seeing in cellulitis now. And so anybody can get it from scratching themselves or getting a bite. So is that always a medical error? The other thing is, since Medicare has really cracked down on medication times, you know, if you don't give a medication within 30 minutes before or 30 minutes after it's scheduled, that's also considered a medical error. When it used to be, I know I worked for a big research hospital, you know, you had those nurses had a 1 hour grace period either side of that medication. And so we are getting better at collecting data. It depends on how we define it. But the other side of that coin is, Jamie, and I know we've talked about this before, I know that you've personally had family experiences where there was a medical error made, whether it was in diagnosis or reading a CT scan. I have had that as well. I've had a physician make a mistake for one of my children in writing a medication dosage. And so they are present. That is the truth. We are looking at them in the last 10 years. The Robert Wood Johnson's Foundation made the big report, the Institute of Medicine 10 years ago, called To Err is Human, and they looked at medical safety. And so we have gotten better. It depends on how we define things. And of course, we all have lived through medical errors ourselves.
Yeah, and I agree. I would just lost my point in my thought there just for a second, but
it's okay. We all do that.
I'm like, what the heck would I was
I just see, I just chalk it up to just Terry always does such a great job of summing things up.
It's because Terry's verbose.
She made me speechless.
That's what I always fall back on. I don't admit that I have a speaking error.
I'm still speechless, so let's just continue on. I'll find my thought in a minute.
Well, what are your thoughts on, Anne, about the fact that some of these things they're reporting really are, it's a stretch to call them medical errors when they could be just adverse events? I think there's two different things going on here. An adverse event is an unintended complication. It may or may not be the result of an error. So, I mean, sometimes these things happen. You know, despite all best procedures, errors can occur, or not errors, but adverse events can occur as a result of the patient's care for themselves when you're not present, or any other number of things that are outside of the hospital's control, do we still count them as errors?
Well, and, you know, about 6 years ago when I was working with the Joint Commission, you know, there were very, really, and I know they're the same way, I just haven't been involved as much in the hospital system, but there was the list of the required reportable adverse errors, you know, adverse events that occurred. And it sounds like, you know, that's death, or that's, you know, wrongfully giving a different type of medication in a wrong route, and, you know, just real extreme. But it does sound like right now that they are, with other quality measures, measuring errors, but classifying them as adverse. So I say you that because of that, you are having more errors reported. The other thought that I had is we've also created a system that we are encouraging nurses and care providers to report their errors, and then it's in a non-punitive way. So people are, you know, and there's easier systems and mechanisms to report your errors. That way that we can do process improvement and really evaluate the system. Is the system causing there to be errors, and what can we do to improve upon that, versus just maybe saying, you know, a nurse is not doing their job, or do they have too many patients, and is our patient load too large? Do we need to, if we can't get the medication in 30 minutes, and I agree, I think 30 minutes is too short of a time and window then to be thought of as an error. I mean, what else can we do to improve that so the errors are decreasing? So not only have we created and defined errors as more broadly than we used to, or the list is getting longer, also our nurses and our care providers are reporting them, and they should. And so then again, the data looks different, and I would like to look at that data in more detail and see what we can do to really evaluate how we're doing compared to what we were doing 10 years ago.
So maybe this report is a positive step in saying that we are reporting, because we're reporting and we're more vigilant, the errors that were always there are now being caught, that we're not committing more errors, but that we're possibly the reason for the increase is that we're better at reporting, recording, and catching the errors.
Correct. I mean, that's my thought. And I think back to 10 years ago when you did make an error, how that would be handled differently than today. And I don't know, Terry, what do you think is the culture around that error reporting now in a clinical setting?
Well, I think that most of them, it's not as punitive as it used to be. And so I would agree with Anne that it's more where's the breakdown in the system and where can we fix it, rather than it used to be, oh gosh, we're going to write you up and put that in your file. And if you have 3 write-ups, then we're going to fire you. And all the other nurses are talking, oh, she got written up. Did you know that she blah, blah, blah. So, you know, the horizontal violence is gone, and there is a system of support, and it's not as authocratic, patriarchal anymore, which I think should increase our reporting.
This kind of leads into our next article. As we look for ways to identify where our problems are situated, one of the things that I think is interesting is another article I found, and if Kim McAllister were here, she would call this our well-duh article, but a troubling trends revealed. Tough demands on nurses adversely affect those patients. University of Maryland in Baltimore reported this from the University of Maryland School of Nursing based on their latest nurse labor study. And they were surveying nurses in North Carolina and Illinois, looking at patient outcomes, and found that, and again, well, duh, that if nurses were busier, if they were had increased psychological demands and tougher work schedules, that the number of pneumonia deaths increased in those facilities. So clearly, we've identified where some of these problems are, but it still seems like there's a lot of pushback to increase the number of caregivers. We focus here on the show on nurses, but certainly more eyes at any level on the problem would be an improvement, and yet hospitals continue to cut back and tighten up their scheduling.
Jamie, I thought this was a great article because it wasn't just about staffing. And so as the push has come about for magnet hospitals, nursing as a tradition was very much because it was born out of hospitals and military, that patriarchal top-down kind of model of leadership. And so the number one, even when they controlled for staffing in this research, the number one thing was psychological distress in the nurses, how psychologically distressing their workplace was, which goes back into mentoring models and leadership models and autonomy and all of those things. And so I was glad to see that somebody had done some research to back that up. It's not just about how many nurses are on the floor. It's about how you're running the floor and what you're asking the nurses to do and how what kind of buy-in they're getting.
Yeah, and I should have read deeper into this, but you're right. It's not about the staffing. It's about the culture of the hospital. And, I know nurses who are extremely busy in great hospitals, and they love working where they work, and they feel supported. And so you're right. It's there's a lot more to this, and this article seems to point that out. And what about your thoughts?
Well, and I liked what it said in here about that hospitals that have a patient safety focused culture, the nurses are feeling less stress, and there's better patient outcomes. Again, going back to that, magnet type of status and culture that the magnet status brings to a hospital. But also it talks about long shifts that the nurses are working, the demand and stress on their bodies during the different work, that the lifting, the posturing, different things of that sort. So it makes you think, not the number of nurses on the floor, like you said, but how long have they been working? And, more errors will come when you're working longer, or you are more stressed when you're, how many times have we worked a 12-hour shift and the last 30 minutes of your shift is when that major hemorrhage or incident occurs, and you've already been working for 11 and a half hours?
Yeah, that's always what it happens. You're trying to leave shift and I had never made that association. I think that's good. Another good thing they pointed out in this article that I blogged about a few weeks ago after I had a vacation was when nurses reported a lack of time away from their job. So it's those nurses who work 5 days and then they're off, but they're so short staffed on the floor that they call them every day, or they work 10 days in a row, or you have to work every other weekend, or you can't have 2 weeks of vacation in a row. Oh my gosh. Or no one can take vacation for 4 months because we're completely understaffed. And in the end, that costs the hospital more because you have poorer patient outcomes.
Right. And poorer job satisfaction. You're going to have a higher turnover rate and a higher customer or patient satisfaction rate also. So what can you do to create a culture of balance for the needs of the hospital, the work-life balance of the nurse, and also to make sure that you have good patient outcomes? And I think that's the bigger question.
Hire more nurses.
Or train them too.
That would be a good idea too.
Well, and it's not, it always astounds me when I, and this happens in all kinds of businesses. It's not just in the healthcare industry. I see it, there are places where you've got people that aren't making a lot of money, but are working in such a great job environment that's not, they're happy where they are. It's not about the money they're making. They feel valued and they feel treasured. The amount of time it takes for a hospital to train a new employee, bring them into their system, shadow them, make sure they're competent, do all these things that they have to do with new nurses that they bring on staff, you would think that they would work that much harder to retain and build that kind of environment where nurses feel like they're valued, and other staff members. I mean, this is not just the environment for the workplace for nurses. It's the environment that the entire hospital operates under. And I wonder why more businesses in general, but certainly hospitals included, when they have this negative turnover rate and they're just, they're constantly in a state of hiring because they are losing people because they're unhappy, that they don't improve their system. And yet this seems to be a consistent problem.
That is a very good question, Jamie. And, you know, there's a lot of people up at the top, and I wish we would answer this question, but somewhere along the line, it must be cheaper to hire new ones at a lower salary than to keep the old ones and retire them. It's got to be, or they would change the system.
Right. Sometimes not, and I guess I'm thinking outside of a hospital, because hospital is very medically driven, but there's other health organizations that medical piece of it isn't the only piece of it. And sometimes then you have some of these leaders that don't have that medical background and knowledge in order to make those appropriate decisions or to set the bar high enough to have a high enough quality of nurse to come in and meet the demands of the services. And so I see a disconnect there also, is the lack of knowledge about the medical field and really what healthcare needs.
Good point.
I know we're not going to solve the management issues for healthcare here today on the show, although wouldn't that be nice? Just, you know, wave our wands and ding. But
when we are the benevolent dictators of the world, will be right.
You know, I have a good friend of mine who's a paramedic, and when he's been on the show a couple of times, he says, you know, when I'm the benevolent dictator of the world and I have my legion of flying monkeys, everything will be all right. So there's my nod to Kelly Grayson. But certainly we'll just need to keep watching this. But one of the things that's really good in both these articles we've kicked off with today is that the research is being done. And you can't really, what the heck was that?
That was my phone. I'm so sorry.
I thought your stomach was growling. I thought we'd kind of cut into your lunch hour or something.
That would be my droid phone.
That was cool.
It's like she's got Cylons in her house. Anyway, I completely lost my train of thought.
Said you were glad that they were actually doing the research, and who else is going to do that kind of research but nurses?
Yeah, go nurses. Well, I mean, it's, you can't identify, if you can't identify the problems and start identifying the causes of those problems, then you can't fix the problem. So, you know, you can say something's wrong, but if you can't figure out what that something is that's troubling you in the back of your mind, that something needs to be changed, you need to identify the problem. You need to identify the sources of the problem. And these two articles are going down that path and getting in that direction. And hopefully this is just a continuing trend of good research that's going to continue to improve what we do in healthcare, because that's as much of an important part of reforming our system and improving the cost effectiveness of the system as anything else. Now, I've made you speechless. That's astounding.
Well, and the other thing that I thought of, Jamie, and we talked about it on another show last week, is when associations come out with higher standards of care that we have to provide as nurses, in such as perinatal nursing, it's looked now more upon as a critical care, and the recommendations are different staffing to patient ratios. So when you have the research that shows, in order to provide this quality of care, nurses at this level need to be able to have more one-on-one time with their patients. But then on the other flip side of it, we don't have enough nurses, or that they're tired or overworked, not getting their vacation. So how do we balance all of that? And it's just another thought to this, is we're raising the bar, but what are we doing to support that, those changes of that higher quality of care?
I'm talking about, you know, increasing the expectations, increasing the training is a good segue, I think, into our next article. And this is an article that looks at the every year the NLN, the National League for Nursing, releases their annual survey of nursing schools and looks at a variety of different things to do with availability of educational resources, the numbers of students out there, the demographics of those students, and putting together a good look at outcome, you know, what's the future look like for the future workforce of nursing. And this is, I think there's no major surprises here, but I do want to point out that, again, still continuing, we are in this shortage of nursing faculty. And not just faculty for the entry-level nursing positions, but even more critically, faculty that are available to be involved with the graduate programs for advanced practice nurses and for creating more faculty educators for nursing. And so I wonder, you know, I know, Terry, you're involved as an educator in a nursing school, in a nursing program. And last week's episode, we had a few of your students on talking about their RN to BSN travels and journeys. But we also talked a good bit about online education and the ability to kind of, you know, timeshare the resources of individuals that might not ordinarily be able to instruct.
Yes, we did. And that's a very good show. You all should go to Insights in Nursing and listen to it, because I think the students did a beautiful job talking about some of these issues that the NLN brings up in this article. I think hopefully things are changing, because as with this IOM report coming out, you know, I live in a state that's not that progressive, and you should just have seen these big educational bodies and these consortiums get together and start talking about where we want to head this, and where should nursing education go, and where should the push be. And subsequently, I think we're going to see in the next 12 to 18 months, you know, I'm in an RN to BSN program, and our enrollment rate has exploded. We are now looking at developing a master's program so that we can educate more nursing faculty. But here's the reality. As a person who is both an advanced practice nurse and now working on a PhD in nursing, I will tell you that when I moved from the clinic to a hospital-based program, I took a big cut in pay. Then when I decided I wanted to move into a BSN level, I took an additional cut in pay. And so the reality is, for these, especially these programs like family nurse practitioner programs, to pull faculty in, they're taking a pay cut. And many of them, this push for the DNP will help, because we'll have lots of doctorally prepared clinical nurses as soon as they come out of school. And so they won't have to go back and get another degree. And so that will be a benefit not only to those nurses who come out with a DNP, but it will be a benefit to the programs who run nurse practitioner programs, because they'll have, those people will be able to come out and also teach as faculty. You know, in university settings, you have to have a doctorate degree. That's just a requirement, or you can't teach. And so hopefully those things will help. Clinical sites, I think you bring up a good point with technology. There are not enough clinical sites. And so using things like Simulation Man, online scenarios, working our students through some of those things where it's okay to kill the patient and learn from that, because we learn more from our mistakes than when, as a clinical instructor, you know, I could just watch this error about to happen. I just elbow that student out of the way and take over. When they can fail themselves, they're going to learn a whole bunch more from that. So hopefully education in general will start looking at other places for clinical learning and hands-on learning. We now have a program where the students can practice starting IVs, and the video tutorial runs them through it, but they get to stick the vein, and they're not sticking a person. So hopefully those things will help. And in another couple of years, maybe this NLN research will look differently than it does now.
And I agree. And with the clinical laboratory training, I think back when I went to nursing school, and we didn't have much lab time. And really, we went and we did it all at the clinical site. And I've been involved in a program with EMS, and really getting to know paramedics as a part of the healthcare team and the training that they go through. And they do so much lab work. And I've been to some of our colleges around the state and seen some of these amazing lab settings that they have for on-site training that I would have never even thought of when I was in nursing school. And it's amazing. I mean, they have buildings that they've built roads and, like, you're going down a main street and they have wind blowing through. I mean, it's just amazing what they can do to simulate just actually what could be happening. And so I think what can we do to learn from other health professionals and their training? Or can we, you know, at these colleges, can they share and build these lab training facilities to be shared for all of the healthcare training that goes on in the college? And it is so hard to get nurses into the clinical setting. And being a preceptor in a clinical setting, it takes a lot of time. And then you have to take less patients because you're doing training for the nurses. So there are tons of opportunities for us to be able to still train these nurses. But the other thing that that it talks about is the diversity of the type of nurses that are coming into nursing school. And with our diverse population, still we're not seeing the diversity of the different nurses coming in. I know in Colorado, we have 20,000 nurses that will be retiring in the next couple of years. And so we have an older nursing population, and I know that's similar across the nation. Well, in that older nursing population, they have been a lot of our educators. And some of these newer nurses coming in, you know, Terry, like you said before, when you go into education, you're not making as much. It doesn't look as pretty and as fun either. There's better new graduate programs to go into OB or ICU. So why would you want to go into education when you could go and do that hands-on excitement in more critical care area? So I see that also as a challenge as we're moving forward and trying to increase the number of faculty members and clinical sites across healthcare.
It almost seems like there needs to be an opportunity to find a different way to involve educators in the nursing process. I know that it's not like a typical college professor setup where you've got an English professor or a foreign language professor who is involved in teaching what is largely theory and practical applications of that theory, but it doesn't require, you know, the hands-on can be done in the classroom. Whereas when you're training nurses, you need to have that clinical base to touch and bring those skills and that knowledge to the classroom and bring that skills and that knowledge to the clinical setting for your students. May there be a better way to have to be able to encourage more part-time support or get ways to involve the hospitals in supporting more, providing more faculty members and creating ways to be able to, A, compensate our faculty members better. We traditionally underpay our educators in this country, no matter what their field is. But also to find ways to get more, to give those nurses the ability to be both clinical nurses as well as educators.
You know, Jamie, I just had a crazy thought, and the nursing school that I went to was a diploma nursing school at one time, and a diploma nurse, which we no longer have diploma nursing schools in the nation, but the nurses would go and live at the hospital dormitory, and part of their training was working on the actual floor and living and being a part of the healthcare system. And then there would be classroom time, but they became a part of the workforce as part of their training. And they, it just made me think that have we kind of evolved around into that might be a possibility again someday, that's how we can maybe take care of not only training more nurses, but also providing that backfill of the shortage of healthcare providers that we have.
Well, the problem with that model was there actually are still diploma programs in
are
the
there?
United States. Yeah, there are a few, and they're doing well. The problem with that model was, and I was a diploma nurse as well, but not necessarily ingrained in that model, was that the students were paying, and then they were running the floor at night. And so they were paying for school, and then they just left them. And with the culture of safety that we've developed, and all, you know, probably – part of the problem with us finding clinical sites is, even for our RN to BSN program, so these are licensed nurses, is what they're able to do as, quote, students legally. And so they carry malpractice insurance, and they have a drug screen, and they have their immunizations up to date, and they have this, and they have a background check. And yet there are still clinical sites that will not allow them in because we have such a culture of litigation. And so that becomes an issue. I think you brought up a great point when we talked about interdisciplinary collaboration on education. How great would it be for the nursing students to actually work with the med students on a clinical project? As medical students, how to start IVs and how to do some of these things they need to do, or the PA students, and have them work together to teach each other and even follow each other around. I think we'd get so much more peer buy-in if maybe it wasn't just the nursing students have clinical here and these students have clinical here, and, you know, if we maybe did an interdisciplinary model of collaboration. And those students who work for hospitals do better, of course, in a clinical setting. But we're going to have to rethink how we're doing clinical education. And that was part of the IOM call. We're going to have to rethink how we're educating nurses. And maybe we should hang out with the paramedics is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, don't say that. I'm just kidding.
Ann's been hanging out a lot with paramedics lately because that's been a couple of the conferences most recently. So the paramedics have a good time. I can take my let me take my nursing cap off and put my paramedic hat on. I you know, we have a good time, and we I think there's paramedics
there's a lot
are still
to learn.
Well, and paramedics are still involved in more like something more much more like the diploma nursing model, which is on the job training. Working alongside training from within, all of that process is really well ingrained in that system. And, you know, that whole sector is fighting to find an identity and work their way up to a standard that includes a degree-based licensure, and looking very hard in many ways at what nurses have done over the last 100 years to see if there's a way or a model to bring that profession up to a similar standard for care and for education. So,
they're not the only ones, too, Jamie. Interesting, radiology associations, you know, radiology programs, many of them have been certificate programs for a long time to be a radiology tech. And as of 2013 or 2015, to sit for your radiology tech exam, you're going to have at least an associate's degree, if not a bachelor's. So they're not, you know, the paramedics aren't the only ones. So as we're all struggling in this educational model together, maybe we can pull something from history and English and learn from them, but also the medical model, and also bringing in our nursing theory, and at the same time moving toward a preventative community care-based model, because our students certainly don't get enough of that exposure either.
Right. No, I agree 100%. That would be my public health hat on.
I was waiting for that. That's the public health side coming out.
And, you know, some of the nursing programs, the community health section is very small. And, you know, I think back to my community health section, it was very little compared to me, what I've learned in the last 4 years of population-based health. And one thing about it is you really get to know all the different health entities and the different resources for care when you are looking at population-based health. And I think nursing students would really benefit from that. And that has been my spin to be able to create programs and systems.
One of the things you said was very important, that there needs to be a bigger inclusion of other clinical opportunities. And then maybe the solution to reduced access to clinical opportunities in a traditional healthcare setting is for the requirements for the degree to be expanded so that we can maybe take some of our in-hospital clinical time, turn it into some simulator time in the school, and let's focus more on that preventative model that we're supposed to be keeping in track of, but we do far too little to pay attention to in nursing school. Get out there and do some clinical time, more expanded clinical time in a community setting in different places. There are probably a lot more opportunities to work in those settings than we are currently taking advantage of.
And the other point that I really agree with Terry is looking to integrate our training with other health professionals and streamlining those trainings. We all start IVs. There are things that we all do, medication reconciliation. What can we do to train together and not overload our healthcare system with different contracts and different relationships? Let's just come together and train together. I love that idea.
Well, and I can tell you that there might be opportunities in some places that if they worked it out appropriately, there are places in the country that would love to have an additional member in the back of an ambulance to staff a unit. Great opportunities to see a variety of patient populations in just one clinical day and be able to provide assistance with lifting, with moving the patient, with assessing the patient, and work alongside another trained healthcare professional in a different than normal nursing field, but certainly giving you the ability to develop some of that assessment and that patient care demeanor that you need as any healthcare professional.
Yes,
I want to go for a day. That'd be cool.
You know,
it's fun. I did it, but they wouldn't even let me start IVs. They made me so mad.
No, they won't. They won't often let you do. Depending on how you set it up, the skills. But you would be CPR trained. You would be able to do some things, and they probably would, depending on how it's set up, let you begin assessments with vital signs and things like that. I think perfect for the nursing student to kind of get their feet wet and then have a different look at patients and get a very diverse patient population under your belt in just a few days, because it's going to be geriatric care and some occasional pediatric patients, trauma and medical patients. And so you get to see a very broad spectrum of what you might potentially want to choose as your nursing specialty eventually. So,
and it exposes you to all the different resources in the community and getting to know paramedics and EMTs and what they do. And I always put this out here that 2 years ago, I didn't even know the difference between a paramedic and an EMT. So, and that's being 14 years in healthcare. That's really sad, and why don't we know what each other does? So I think that will only strengthen who we are as health professionals. And I think that that would be the wave of the future.
And I think that's a great place to wrap up today's show. So, Anne, before we head out, why don't you tell folks where they can find Anne Robinson online if they wanted to see what you're up to?
I am on Twitter and Facebook at Caring Anne, A-N-N-E. And can I put out my new little adventure that starts next week that I'm putting out there on Facebook? Can I talk about that? So I am privileged to be able to travel around 4 states in a 10-day time period. So I have a contest that I've put out there, name the airport that I'm in, because I think there's going to be over 8 different airports that I'll be in that 10-day time period. So it'll be tracked on Twitter and Facebook and try to guess the airport we're at. And there will be prizes at the end who can come up and list every single stop, every single airport through the 10-day adventure. So look for that. But thank you, Jamie, for having me on. This has just been great, and I look forward to being on many more episodes.
Well, and if you follow Caring Anne and you also follow me under PodMedic, you might be able to get a clue to some of those airport stops, because we're actually going to be traveling together part of that time.
Yes.
So anyway, well, I look always great to have you on the show in all of my different shows that I've had you on, and hopefully have you back here more regularly on Insights in Nursing. So it's great to have you here.
Thank you.
And last and certainly not least, Terry Schmidt from nursestory.com at Online Nursing. Where else can we find you?
Oh, that's where I hang out. I'm on Twitter and have a blog. Yeah, I don't Facebook much. I just am running out of time to do that. So you can find me those 2 places or here on Insights in Nursing.
Oh, boy. Thanks for the plug. I'll tell you, there's pay attention to the different nurse blogs out there, because we got the privilege to see some things that are coming out from the Campaign for Nursing's Future, which is, of course, funded by the Johnson & Johnson and Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And I'll tell you, they brought some of the nurse bloggers together yesterday. And Terry, it was some pretty exciting stuff coming out. So you want to be, well, I'm sure we'll all be blogging and tweeting about it as the things are released.
It was amazing.
So without further ado, I'll go ahead and wrap up the show. I am, of course, your host, Jamie Davis. You can find my other programs, The Nursing Show at nursingshow.com. And if you want to check out some of the shows I do on the EMS side as I take my nurse cap off and put my paramedic cap on, you can check out all those shows and a bunch of other great programs over at the ProMed Network, promednetwork.com. Of course, you'll find links to the articles we discussed in this episode, as well as links to Ann and Terry online over at insightsinnursing.com in the show notes for this episode. And I do continue to urge you to send in those comments and ideas, questions for our panelists. Send those emails in to insightsinnursing@gmail.com. And I'll forward them on to the panelists if you have a specific question, or share them here with the panelists. And just real quick, I want to thank AllNurses.com for re-upping for another couple of months as one of our bandwidth sponsors here and at some of the other nursing shows on the ProMed Network. So if you haven't checked out the forums over at AllNurses.com, please do so, and thank them for continuing to support the costs involved with putting out all this media on our different nursing programs. And Brian and the guys over there at allnurses.com have really been great to step up and help out with that. So I just want to thank them. That's it. We'll go ahead and close out. Remember to stay safe and check back here next week for another episode of Insights in Nursing.